And a good morning. Welcome to K-Man's In Focus. I'm Dave Lewis, in for Brandon Peoples this morning. Brandon remains in quarantine and looks like he'll be free to move about to the country. We anticipate him back in the studio on Monday, so still wishing him well. We have four different segments of the program today. We're going to be visiting with folks from the Riley County Senior Center, Animal Shelter, and then also the Optimist Tree Lot, which will be opening up soon. Our first segment, though, features Riley County Extension Ag Agent Greg McClure. Greg, good morning.
Good morning.
You know, you gave me a list of about 43 different topics, and we have about 15 minutes.
That's the way I always do it. You always cut me off anyway, so... It works.
Well, I'm just going to let you go. And the first thing we're going to talk about is the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program. Tell us more.
Well, I just wanted to put out a reminder to our ag producers that this program is going on now, and they've got until the 11th of December to get an application in. So this Coronavirus Food Assistance Program is actually it's a supplemental income program to make up for losses that occurred during this COVID-19 season. And so there are payments available on just about every crop. So corn, wheat, soybeans, alfalfa even this time. And then on hogs and pigs and then lambs and on beef. And so it's definitely worth their time to get that application in.
What's the process?
And the process is so simple. On the crops this time, FSA office, Farm Service Agency office, actually has all the information they need. All you have to do is make a phone call and say, let's go with it. It's based on planted acres and that farm's proven yield. And if it doesn't have a proven yield on file, they've got a base yield that they'll use. And so they've got it all. It's just a matter of a phone call. It took me about 5 minutes to get mine done. The livestock part's a little harder. They have to do a count sometime between, I think the dates are April 15 and August 1 is somewhere in that range. So they have to do a count and turn those numbers in. But really pretty simple and definitely worth their time to get that application in. So I just wanted to put out that reminder, December 11 is the deadline.
Okay. Well, fall harvest is pretty much done, and it sounds like, a lot of ag pretty producers should be pretty happy with how things ended up for their fall crops.
Yes, I think for the most part, this is going to turn out to be a good farming year. You know, it started out really tough, maybe a little harder for on some of the livestock guys with that first half of the year and the prices not being very good. But the second half of the year here, we've got some good prices and we had some good yields. And so, you know, most of the dryland corn and was above 100 bushels per acre and some of it up to 180.
Ooh.
And that's good, really good dryland corn. Soybeans were more variable than that, you know, probably in the 30 to 60 range, but a lot of 45 and 50 bushel yields from what I've been told. And then some grain sorghum in the neighborhood of 120, 130 bushel per acre. And I don't know, you probably don't follow the prices, but right now the basis is really, really good on grain sorghum and the price is above $5 a bushel. And so we've got a real good price on grain sorghum.
I think that's about the price that my dad got back in like 1975.
Yeah, back in a good year. That's right. And another year he may have got $2.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. And you know, we've seen recent times too where, you know, those numbers have been
pretty close to that in recent times too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it can be tough.
Yeah. Well, I know that a lot of folks have been getting their wheat in the ground. Tell us how that's going.
Well, wheat's in the ground. You know, it's a little bit dry, but it should all be in the ground. Some of it, it's maybe a little uneven in the stand, but I think we're in decent shape right now.
Okay. Well, and one of the things, you know, and I know you're one that looks in the forecast, and it looks like we have a chance of showers on Saturday, and that probably couldn't come soon enough.
Yeah, it's time for that rain. You know, in some of the fields, you can, once you get through the hard layer on top, you've got a little bit of moisture. In others, you know, I've been out, I've tried to put a probe in the ground and just can't get it in the ground. So it's hard, which it's dry. So, yep, time for a rain. We're due.
Yeah. Well, let's go down our Greg list. And there's a number of topics here. And the next one is handling vaccines. And you know, there's all kinds of vaccination things that that farmers are keeping in their fridges. Tell us where some of the concerns that you have right now.
Well, you know, we routinely have, they're usually in the fridge in the kitchen. Sometimes there's a fridge out in the garage or out in the shop. That's another issue in itself, in that those refrigerators aren't made to run in those conditions, and the temperature may not be right in those, and probably something we should address as well. But, excuse me, as I was, listening to the temperature that some of this COVID vaccine is going to have to be held at, it just kind of made me think that we really ought to talk about handling animal vaccines, because we don't always do that right either. They're looking at minus 70 degrees Celsius on some of this COVID stuff. That's negative 94 Fahrenheit. For those of you that aren't real quick at math, and I'm not either.
That's why we farm.
But most of our animal vaccines are stored at refrigerator temperature, which would be 35 to 45 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's all good as long as they're in a refrigerator. Some things we need to be thinking about, though, is we should check that temperature when they're delivered, because it could be that they came during a warm time of year and you weren't home and the temperature may have been off. Problem is, if the temperature rises on that, when you're not ready to use it, the vaccine starts to go bad. The other issue we have is when we're transporting that vaccine from the refrigerator out to the working chute. How do we handle that? Well, I don't actually recall having a cooler when I was a kid helping my dad. So you have to wonder whether our vaccine was effective or whether we just got lucky. But I certainly have a cooler when I take vaccines out, and I've got an ice pack in it. Something that I need to do better is, if I'm putting it in with an ice pack, I probably need to put a little paper in between to make sure that I'm not getting it too cold in places. Something I would suggest at this time of year, where the temperature is kind of even out there, not hot out, it would work real well to take those ice packs and have them at refrigerator temperature. So you could thaw them out, throw them in the refrigerator. So then when you put them in your cooler, they would be at that 45 degrees, 30, 35, 45 degrees, and be just right for keeping your vaccines. And so you could work for quite a while with that. Once we're out shoot side, then it's time to again, take good care of our vaccines. We want to make sure that we don't mix up any more of that modified live vaccine than what we can use within an hour's time. Because beyond that, it's going downhill fast and not going to be effective. And as much money as we put into these things, it doesn't make sense to, and as much time as we put in for effort to vaccinate our animals, it doesn't make sense to put something in them that isn't going to work.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of detail, and I remember a lot of these, growing up on the farm and dad doing, a number of vaccinations on cattle and such, and, some of those tools, it's important to take care of them.
Certainly is, your syringe care, another thing that I don't think we do very well most of the time, we take that thing and we rinse it out. What we want to really avoid doing is using any kind of detergent. Detergents can harm many of the vaccines, and so our syringes, our reusable syringes, really need to be cleaned with just really hot water and maybe a brush. And we can take those apart. Take them apart, you can clean them up, and you may end up with a washer in there now and then needs to be replaced, but it was going to need to be replaced anyway. And so take them apart, clean them up, let them dry out, then you can put them back together, run a little water through them, and store them in a plastic bag would be ideal. That way they wouldn't get dust and dirt all over them. Another question often comes up is how often do we change needles? Well, if you and I are going to go in and get a vaccine, we're going to want a clean needle, right? And in some cases, we do that. We've got some producers that are worried about bovine leukosis or anaplasmosis, and they'll change needle with every animal because those diseases can be transmitted with a dirty needle. Most of the time when we're vaccinating livestock, we'll go 10 to 15 animals before we change needle. Of course, if the needle's ever bent, we change that thing right away, throw that one away, because any bent needle is likely to be a broken needle, and that's a situation you don't want to have happen.
Okay. Well, let's talk a bit about more some injection things that with regard to cattle, because it's very important to make sure that everything's taken care of.
Well, as you take a look at what we're going to do as far as needle size, if we're going to do subcutaneous on our cattle, we're looking at a 16 or 18 gauge needle, about a half inch to three quarters of an inch long. If we're going to go intramuscular, so in the muscle, again, a 16 or 18 gauge needle, an inch to an inch and a half long. Now, I'm a sheep guy. Most of my needles are going to be 18 gauge. We don't hardly ever use a 16. I guess we have a few pigs, too. Sometimes we use a 16 on those big sows. So you just want to get the right size needle for the animal. You know, we'll get clear down to 20 gauge on some of these things with our smaller lambs. As far as injection spacing, if we're given more than one injection, we want to get those at least a hand width apart. So that's about 4 inches. And ideally, we're going to put those things on a horizontal distance apart so gravity doesn't carry them to where they mix. And that's another thing that we should mention is when we're doing vaccines, you know, oftentimes we're giving more than one thing at a time, but we don't mix different kinds of vaccines together. So that's a definite no-no in the livestock health business.
We're speaking with Greg McClure, Riley County Extension Ag Agent. And Greg, we have a number of meetings. They are coming up, but not until after the first of the year. So why don't you give us some dates on some different things that you've got planned?
Yeah, just a quick preview of some things coming up after the first of the year. We do this coffee shop agronomy series every year. I'm going to give it a shot again this year. Unfortunately, I'm expecting to move that probably to a Zoom format just as soon as I decide to pull the trigger on that. Basically, the room that we would meet in is awfully small, and I think that'll change. But anyway, January 14, we'll talk about herbicides and weed control with Sarah Lancaster, the new weed specialist at K-State. January 28 is plant tissue testing to fine-tune our fertility programs, and that's with Dave Mengel. Dave is actually retired soil fertility specialist from K-State. And then February 11 to be best management practices for row crops. A lot of that is going to be seed spacing, fertilizer, timing, those kind of things. Ignacio Ciampiti. And so some really, really good people on the programs. We'll get some more information about those out later.
Okay. Well, that's a lot on your laundry list here. For information on any of these, talk about, the vaccines and everything. You've got all those details available online, don't you?
Most about everything is available online. You know, I may have to put this together in one piece, but yeah, if you can go to our website, www.riley.ksu.edu.
Simple enough. Greg McClure, Riley County Extension Agent, thanks for joining us, and have a good rest of your fall. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
Thank you for your time.
Glad to have you. Coming up next, we're going to be visiting with... looks like Liz Nelson's going to be joining us on K-Man's In Focus, as she will be here on behalf of the Riley County Senior Center.